you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.
Hello and welcome back to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes. With me, Godfather of Golf, Peter Donahue. Pete, how's it going?
Andy, it's going good. You've been gone a while. We've been missing you while you've been down in the Caribbean.
Been in Mexico, had sick children. I haven't had a podcast in a long time. I've been changing my swing. So many changes going on. So it didn't, never really felt like I had something to say. I was in the process of, kind of hibernation.
Yeah. And now have you come out of it, or are you, can you speak about it yet?
I can. That's why we're here.
Good.
I wouldn't want to take the cookies out of the oven until they're cooked.
Oh, absolutely. So. Yeah. No. You can speak about things that before they're hatched.
Yeah. I'm saying the opposite. You want to wait for him to hatch.
No, that's what I mean. It would be a mistake to speak about things before they hatched. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've got it figured out now. This is all clear to me. And then you realize, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I'll tell you my, some of this we've talked about before, my story of golf and changes and different things over the past, say the past 2 months. And we'll just kind of share how it went up till, we'll end with, I played golf twice in Mexico. Okay. So we talked about the Hank Haney lesson on the podcast. That might have been the last podcast that we did together. And we basically got a lesson from Hank Haney. Showed me a few things. I remember we talked about was like the way he showed me through like the entirety of the swing. Okay. Right. Like getting the takeaway, and then the hands at the top, and then like kind of the transition, and then into the ball, and then swinging through kind of on plane from there. And the way that he put it all together had like brought a real sense of clarity to the changes, as opposed to just kind of like one or two, little tweaks or tips. And then I practiced, I guess I could notice right away, like the shots, it had like more potential, like my better shots were better shots. Right. So that was kind of the proof almost of like, okay, this would be a better way to do it. And then I practiced a lot, probably, 4 or 5 hours a week for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would be probably a fair assess of like, and with feedback from video, feedback from, mirrors and kind of making sure. I felt like I really kind of like understood what I was trying to do and the way, the way to do it. And I was able to hit different shots and it kind of felt better and felt good. And I was able to, even if just on a, just on a simulator, feel like I could play golf holes, as opposed to just like, I wasn't just hitting like 7 irons over and over, right? I was able to change clubs and do different distances and do half shots, full shots, curve left, curve right, all sorts of fun things. And then I also did most of this with my modern equipment. So which felt like, oh yeah, this is going to be easier. And as I'm like working through something new, like let's use a bigger driver, whatever. And so I was happy with how I was playing. I was really like, excited to go
on the simulator.
Yeah. 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 In this very controlled, comfortable environment. Mm-hmm. I knew better. I just had a feeling of like, oh, like golf is going to be easy now. You know what I'm talking about. It's like I got the swing from the best coach. I'm going to use modern equipment where last year I didn't use that. It's going to be like, I'll be just fine. Nothing.
Wind at my back.
Yeah. No fear at all. So then we go to Mexico. The first course we played was at Mayacoba, which like El Camaleon. They had like a live event there this year, but they played, I think that's the event where They used to play a PGA event where like Matt Kuchar like didn't tip his caddy or something. Oh, remember that story? I think that's the course. I think that's the course. I could be wrong, but it was very. You ever played golf in Mexico? Have you ever played?
Yes, yeah. On the Baja.
Okay, well, this is very much like playing golf in a jungle.
Mm.
So there's just the fairways are not narrow, they're not wide, they're maybe average, but then anything off the fairway is just you lost the ball.
Yep.
And so I birdied the first hole, drive right down the middle, hit pitching wedge like 3 feet, birdie. And then I lost, like, from the rest of the round, I lost so many golf balls.
Really?
So I birdied the first hole, and I finished, I think the last 4 or 5 holes, I was like one under. And I finished with 83. So that middle stretch was, not anywhere close to playing good.
Yeah.
And I wasn't just, normally I like to, with driver, like kind of aim up the left side, let it like fade back a little bit to the middle or hit it pretty straight. It's not like I was, like, hoping for a fade, but it just stayed straight, and like I lost the ball, but it was like a decent hit, or like it just like over, a cut turned into a slice. Just like I wasn't even like hitting my start. I was like missing my start line by like 40 yards. So I was like, some shots I would be aiming in my mind, at least I'm aiming up the left side of this hole to hit a fade, and I would start up the right side of the hole and it would fade. And I didn't have any, kind of like a clue. That was a disorienting, because I haven't played golf like that in a really, a really long time. Not that I'm always like the most accurate, or like the straightest player, but I'll at least have a sense and like an understanding of like if something happened, why did that happen, mm-hmm. and where do we, where do you go from there, and ways to fix it. But I didn't this time. And I guess I found myself thinking, trying to like remember through, this swing that I seemed to kind of have an understanding of it, which involves like a takeaway a little more outside at the top of the swing. My hands are and arms are like further away from my chest. There's more space there. And then downswing, chest stays back a little bit while the arms come down, and then the rest kind of just like goes from there. And it felt on the course, it felt just like impossible to get all of those things right at the same time. Like not even close to like being able to do that. And so now, sometimes it did, like we played two rounds. The second round was about the same. But the second day I hit a few like iron shots that were like really, really good. Like some of the best shots I ever hit, but also again, like some of the worst shots I'd ever hit.
Followed by, sure.
I guess that's kind of where the story ends. And so there's kind of a lot to unpack and to decipher going forward of how much change is too much change, or is how do you find a way to upgrade your swing without feel like it's like a complete overhaul, or do I just need like a little like more practice on this like newer swing, and it'll be there.
Yeah.
And so I know you've had a fair share of, one, you learned to play golf left-handed, but also you've tried changing things and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's so interesting, the experience that you had, because, and I think you described it beautifully that, everything seemed to be so simple.
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure what the science is called, but I recall, I'm trying to think right now of the book that was written called Flow, written by Sixcent Mahalia was the model that they used for the mind was had to do with attention. How many bits of information can the human mind manage at one time? Mm-hmm. For instance, experimenting with what bits of information, what do you mean by that? Well, if you have a conversation going on, mm-hmm. there are so many bits of information coming in. And now if you're listening to another conversation, there's more bits. And how many conversations could someone listen to at mm-hmm. one time? Why do people sometimes say, as a friend of mine did growing up, when he'd be driving his car and we'd be all like, you know, the car was filled with guys that are screaming, and he'd say, and he'd turn the radio down, he'd say, shut up, I need to see. You know, because he was expressing this thing. His mind was too filled with all the chatter for him to take in any more information. And so what is it about that when you go out into that outside situation, mm-hmm. you know, why is there overload now? Yeah. And is it just that an inside, as a for instance, the lack of wind, the lack or the readiness of the geometric reinforcement of mm-hmm. the booth that you're in, the rectangular mat, the lines on the mat, you know, so many of these things are like taken care of for you.
Yeah.
That or what? What is it? Like you're asking what. All of a sudden, I couldn't possibly manage all the things, whereas a short time before, in a different indoor environment, I was able to do that. So, it's an excellent question. And it really bears, you know, on us helping the people that we're dealing with, right? Because we're spending a lot of time in the winter, you know, helping people go through change, you know. Is it okay for us just to let them set sail in the spring without actually accompanying them out on the golf course and seeing what's going on? Mm-hmm. Are the changes that they've been working on, or what do they need? Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel for instance, when I first go out in the spring, I've got to set shafts down on the fairway. Mm. I can't be managing.
Just to align
alignment,
yourself, right? Yeah.
And I need structure mm-hmm. outside in order to help me go through the retraining of my aiming systems. Mm-hmm. You know, because you know, just the way you position yourself over your stance. Let's say that you're sort of used to using your stance, and you get any kind of conflicting information out there, or you're not. Your body is stacked over your feet mm-hmm. in a way that's different. You know, you don't have any checkpoints or feedback mm-hmm. for things like that, you know, to take care of your foundation mm-hmm. out there. You know, those are the things that I've run into in the past is that they're really, you know, the deliberateness of your move to the outdoors mm-hmm. in terms of accounting for. Yeah, now do I think that, I think I overheard you talking with some of the guys earlier about, you know, a coaching circumstance in which a player is able to do something, is able to regulate their reach, you know, under certain circumstances, and yet, you know, when you change those circumstances, so all of a sudden they can't regulate their reach as well, and they end up hitting the shank again or knocking it off the toe or whatever the hell their default pattern is. It's a really fundamental question, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you're going through.
Yeah, because I think for me, the alignment the ball tends to get too far forward, and I tend to aim a little too far right with driver, which would explain like some of what was happening. But then what I felt in my swing was just my arms traveling like too much around my body instead of like lifting too much. And it was like, there wasn't anything I could do to stop it.
Is that the old pattern?
Yeah.
Is that what you,
mm-hmm.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That it just dominated you and said, forget it.
Yeah. And like sometimes I could do it, but, most of the time, half the time I could do it, half the time I couldn't. And so it was just, almost surprising how insistent that move was to me, even though I had been practicing. So I'm practicing a lot and practicing pretty intentionally, doing something different. But then it's you go to a new environment and it's well, let's go right back to how it used to be. So now it's what was that a waste of time? What was, how do I help, how do we help other people who are not as good as me and not practicing as much as me, but whose swings maybe need some sort of work, mm-hmm. right? I guess the up and down nature of this winter of for my coaching and my own golf was kind of at the beginning of the off season. I was talking a lot about how the way people, at least people on the internet, tend to talk about golf swings is well, if you take it this way, then this will happen and then that'll happen. And then that's why you can't hit a fade or something. You know what I'm talking about? And I kind of like to be well, yeah, you actually could still, hit a fade or hit it off the toe with doing whatever. Right. And then from what we were learning from Hank Haney, it was oh wow, maybe that was wrong. Maybe you do just need the correct swing to be able to, to be able to do it. But then now I'm well, I'm a believer that that swing is the correct swing, but I'm questioning how difficult is it to learn that?
Yeah. As a student said to me years ago, which kind of was one of the things that led me to where I am today, which is I'm currently not giving that many lessons or, undertaking to help that many people, because he said to me at one point, I know that this is really right, what you're teaching me. I mean, it's really helping me. I can see it. But who would do this? Who would undertake such a project? Which he felt was really going to the other side of the moon from what he was used to. I mean, he was a guy who drew it, his backswing to the inside, arms wrapping around just as you're describing, came way over the line with his shaft at the top of the backswing, and he just clank it off the shaft, time after time, and cocking it up over his shoulder, and pointing it pointing it towards a wall that would be at his back. Mm-hmm. Which was the opposite of swinging it up across the line. I mean, was the other side of the planet, and it was just such a change. And he would keep getting pulled back, and through coaching and feedback in every session, he could finally right the ship and get the shaft in the backswing where it needed to go to. And then he'd look at me and say, "Yeah, but who would do this? Who would work this hard to get this?" And the last that I heard from him, he was taking up platform tennis, which was something that he could do more intuitively and more reliably, even though I'm sure he probably had knee surgery by now. Because of who he was as an athlete that always wanted to be challenged. Anyhow, it's currently a lot, this prospect of taking major change from an indoor environment and then taking it outside. And I think that it's going to be one of the, the really significant paths, journeys of your life to answer this question, because in it you will, start to develop insight into how you can help your students, do this, which is, I know what ultimately you want to be able to do that.
Yeah, because for me, the change indoors, like, it wasn't that hard. Like, yeah, it was pretty easy and came pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, well, what about for someone where that change doesn't come quick? You know, like, is that, it's just, it's impossible to tell, right? Of like, well, they just need more practice to do this and then they'll get it. Or it's like, well, no, you're actually asking them to, you know, lift a 300 pound boulder that they can't, they're not going to be able to lift until they can lift the 200 pound boulder. So like, what's that bridge that they would actually have to be able to do first before you do the big, you know, do the big one.
Yeah. Yeah. And you will undertake it, you know, I think, and I predict in, you know, in different ways, because it reminds me, you know, when we started the academy, the man that I always refer to, Ray Tash, Ray had been involved in corporate America with GE, and he was a turnaround manager for General Electric, and one of the first things he had to turn around was their information systems department. Mm-hmm. And they were early, GE was early experimenters and builders in computers, mm-hmm. and in you know, using and developing computer technology. And Ray used to talk about the fact that the first time that they ever undertook to reprogram the computers to be able to do something, they needed to have the computers running for you know, like 60 hours or something like that, you know. And so they needed to go in on the weekends and set up their trial. And the first time they did it, you know, it took them 57 hours. And then he'd say, we're going to cut it in half the next time. And so then they go about and they, you know, sit around and re-engineer certain things and do what they have to do to cut it in half. So in your case here, you know, what will it, you know, if you know that the student's mind can handle the changes and actually, you know, display the stuff under certain circumstances, how do you bridge and create it in a new environment? Now, you may have to say, well, you know, in order to do this outside, we're going to have to work together in a frequency that looks like this. I'm going to need to see you 2 weekend days. Mm-hmm. And the first thing we're going to need to establish is your ability to get yourself set up over the ball, mm-hmm. you know, so that your eye line is reliable, so that your sense of, you know, movement through your backswing and your downswing is going to make sense. And, you know, if you get misstacked over your feet, it becomes very difficult to hit these feelings.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So you got to, you know, you got to build a foundation.
Yeah. Also, I think there's that, but then I think there's also what's the right amount of information to give to a person to not overload them.
Did you think you got too much information?
I think my focus in the practice was making like the correct swing, like making a right swing, which I think is subtly different than hitting shots or playing golf, you know. So while in Mexico, I got two texts. I actually got three texts. I'll read them to you. These are from some adult students. Mm-hmm. They said, played Sunset Valley today. Felt like a first round of the year. However, also felt very under control. I was equipped to mitigate and correct misses because of our work together. This text is to serve as a big thank you. Enjoy vacation, knowing you're good at what you do. Nice message.
Nice.
Another person. Played 9 this morning. The headline is that I shot a 38, which was amazing. Everything felt good. Only major blemish was an 8 on the 7th hole. Wind was whipping. And I played in the trees the entire hole. Messed up 2 flop shots and was lucky to walk away with a triple. Finished a 7 pars, a birdie, and a triple. Overall, it was an unbelievable first round of the season. Ball striking was amazing. Thank you. Let's get a time next Friday when you get a chance. One more. I played 3 rounds of golf since Sunday. one in Chicago, two in Arizona. I played considerably better than I have in a long time. I have you to thank. We'll be back to set up another lesson soon. So pretty good.
Very
like
good.
Students are playing good. They're happy. So I was thinking, like, what did I, like, how did I help them do that? And I think that what I definitely helped them better since learning some of, like, Haney's principles. And, you know, whether through, like, helping them feel a different movement by moving their body around or certain things, like, getting the takeaway more outside, hands and arms away from the chest so there's a little bit of space, and, you know, maybe some stuff with the strike. But I was never, like, super picky with them that they, like, got it perfect. Like, I never showed them really their video. So what, because I think sometimes what to them, let's just say someone, one of these guys, Ari, he has a inside takeaway, kind of relatively shut face. So I'd give him a feeling and, you know, to try to get the hands in a different spot and in a different spot at the top of the swing. And he would do pretty good, do good rehearsals. When he got to the ball, it would always kind of like drift back a little bit just to more his normal tendencies. But he was like hitting it. He was hitting it a lot better. So it's like he was moving closer to this like on plane neutral swing, and like the closer he got to it, that was helpful. Or I think if I had been more strict with him about like, no, you gotta make sure you're hitting these spots to hit a good shot, I don't think he would have played as well, because now you're trying to remember all these parts. Does that make sense? So I think I didn't, whereas for me it was like, okay, here's like the correct way to swing, and so you need to swing this way, and I'm going to practice it, and that's going to be what we're going to do. I know it's kind of like a subtle difference, but I think it's a kind of an important one.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that the idea, you know, part of what you're dealing with, or how you're, you know, going about, you know, doing what you're doing, it, at some level, has to do with what you think the student is going to do within their lifestyle. Mm. You know, sure. Are they going to closet themselves away for the next 6 weeks or 3 months, you know, as Nick Faldo did, you know, when he and David Ledbetter were going through, you know, the changes that transformed him when he reappeared out on tour back in the day. Or, you know, are you going to navigate change, given the fact that, you know, your player is going to visit the ideas, or another way of saying that is practice what you're doing. Like what? If you see them on a weekly or twice a month basis, you figure they're going to think about it. Mm-hmm. They're going to do stuff, and then they're going to come back, and you're going to get some sort of feeling for the way they digest and work with the information that you've given them, right? And hopefully, you know, along the line, they're going to learn some sort of pattern for problem solving. You're going to give them a model,
sure,
right? Mm-hmm. And then you're going to give them some parameters through which they can contrast the extremes to be able to find this beneficial or optimal middle ground.
Yeah.
And or you're going to give them, and or you're going to give them some sort of, let's say, athletic development, and they're going to be doing these exercises in their office or in their bathroom or whatever in order to improve their balance or, you know, their action off their feet. And you're going to work with them to create this change within their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I think in that case, you know, not giving them, you know, not is what Hank does with people in a sense of bringing about a transformational change over a period of an hour or 90 minutes going to hold when they go back to Indiana or wherever they're going? Well, I don't know. We'd have to follow them, mm-hmm. you know, to know what really is occurring with these people in their lives. We can see and hear,
yeah.
you know, the whole manner of transformational change that Hank's approach.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he did it with me. Yeah.
Yeah, because, and why? Because of your athletic ability, sure. right? He could take you all the way because of what you were already capable of doing. Mm-hmm. You're very, you know, fluent in movement. Hey, can you do this? Can you swing it this way? Can you take it back this way? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got the, you know, the proprioception. You've got the, you know, the kinesthetic awareness, you know, to be able to do these things. And so it was like a hot knife through butter, you know, like. So, yes. And again, you know, let's, using the old phrase, you know, a picture is worth or equal to 1,000 words. There was a lot of information transferred and passed between you and he in that thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we only see these people who come in and take these lessons come and go. We don't know what happens to them when they go back to Terre Haute or Dubuque or Lake Forest, you know, but we know from you.
Yeah, sure. That's I just, just a thought I kept having was like how much, and I think this is the stuff that like Michael Hebron likes to study and stuff. It's like how much of movement is like automated, like how much is just like kind of going on autopilot when you're swinging a club or throwing a ball that like, and so for me, I was able to, you know, swing a club in a different way, like in a very like safe and controlled environment. And then I wasn't able to do it, you know, I wasn't able to like transfer it to a new environment as well as I had hoped. So that's something that's getting into like the brain and movement and stuff like that, that I think is really interesting. So I'm you know, in my reflection and planning for like the rest of this golf, like the big changes that I had been focusing on, one was a weaker grip, take away with more club face rotation, hands away from my chest at the top of the swing, chest back, arms drop, and then there's kind of like a new release because of the weaker grip. If my arms travel too far at the top, it like throws all, that's where like the really, really bad shots come from. So what I've been doing today and a little bit on Monday, I haven't practiced a ton yet, is going back to my old grip, stronger grip, not worrying about the takeaway, just trying to get at the top of the swing more space between my hands, and then just like letting the downswing kind of happen. And that has been like feeling pretty good and manageable in kind of a different way. So that's, I don't know, that's where
so
we're
is that
at
a
next.
Matter of prioritizing things and saying like, I could make this other stuff better, and I might at a later date, after this aspect that I'm focused on becomes something that's what did you just say, automated or
more automatic? The movement feels automation or automatic.
Yeah. I'm doing something similar. You know, in the sense of you know, changing my setup so that I'm looking, so that my head position and my eye line, my head position is more towards my trail leg than just centered over the middle of my body.
Okay.
That it's where it would be if I'm coiled into a backswing.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I've just let my head ride.
Okay.
Okay, but, you know, in an effort to my balance, my ground pressure is too inconsistent. And so some of that is the fact that I don't have a lot of internal rotation in my hip joints on either leg. Mm-hmm. But changing my backswing to be something that's moving, my pelvis is turning more into my hip joint rather than just my hips swinging or turning open. Mm-hmm. It's an important distinction. And I feel when I'm able to do it, I feel that there's no rush at the top of my backswing because mm-hmm. I'm very well balanced, and I could actually start from that place. Before, I've always been kind of floating around and kind of like hit and miss as far as like, am I able to move from the ground up and create a good sequence, kinematic sequence through the ball? Or am I, going to be firing shoulders, first and end up, just feeling like I'm dragging my lower body through the golf swing? Now, I find similar to you in the past, I've been at this point indoors, where I've been able to hit some really good shots, but every time I go to take it outside, I'm not able to do it. So I've said to myself, well, okay, I'm gonna spend more time than I ever have before creating, a starting move, a starting position, a stance that requires change. So I'm doing it. I'm taking this position in front of mirrors. I'm toying with it on and off all day long, and it's starting to, I notice in my practice, one of the things I'm measuring is like, oh, that's becoming a little easier. I'm getting more organized.
It sounds like, is that, what do you think about like how much change is too much change? For me, when I got everything I was doing or I wanted to do, it was a really good shot. When like something got off slightly, it was like a disaster. To me, that's too much. That's too much change. For you, is it like if your head gets where you want it, like it's going to be give you a better chance at it. But if it kind of drifts back, like it sounds like you'll still be fine.
Yeah.
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 If
I get a little head movement, it's not. No, you're right.
So that's kind of like the sweet spot probably to work from is like what and something Sean Foley said on the podcast that maybe we talked about was like, with his tour players, like with Michael Kim or whoever, he's like, we're going to be working on his right arm all the time. That's the only thing we're going to work on going forward. It's just what we're always going to be doing and we're trying to make it a little bit better. Because he's got to be able to keep playing golf. He can't, the Nick Faldo, like, hideaway method is not realistic for anyone. So,
yeah.
So I think that's maybe as we're like getting to the end of this, getting to some sort of a conclusion is like, can you, the art of changing something is to be able to find that spot where like doing the new move will give you a benefit in some way. But if you don't do it, like you'll still at least be hitting the ball and controlling your way around.
Yeah, I think that also implies, that certain misses you're going to accept.
Yeah.
Like if you were going for, and I determined in my own mind the other day, well, your miss is this, block to my left-handed mm-hmm. swing, a block push, mm-hmm. Which is mainly path.
Okay.
But at any, no matter what, it on the golf course, it's missing to the right of the green, or it's missing, or I should say to the left. I get a little dyslexic when I talk. missing to the left off the tee. And so I had to decide the other day what was more important to me, you know, solid contact and, you know, and consistent, sure, you know, club head speed, yeah, or was it this directional thing with the, you know, the path and the face angle? And of course, you know, when people come in and say they want to be consistent, they yeah mean they want both of these things.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, as a somebody sure who understands and who's, you know, trying to yeah answer the question that you're trying to answer is no, you have to make a choice. You're either going to manage the stuff that's going to control direction and measure that and not measure solid contact mm-hmm so much, or vice versa. And so, so in any case, you know, you're always negotiating these mm-hmm things, I think, with yourself. Okay, well, I've lived this way for a while, mm-hmm, and this is what it's getting me, and, you know, now I want to switch. Mm-hmm. You know, well, are you getting off that train too soon, son? Should we be staying with this a bit yeah longer? You know, I think that's why people need coaching.
Yeah.
Because, okay, you know, we're inclined to follow our minds wherever they're in a habit of going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk ourselves into things like, yeah, no, I'm just going to try this now. And then I'm going to try this. And then yeah I'm going to try this. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon, you know, you've gotten yourself into a pickle. You know, you're all tied up. You know, I believe that the art of learning is, you know, realizing, having the self-awareness to realize when you do stuff like that to yourself and to be yeah okay with it. Sure. Yeah, that's me again.
Yeah.
You know, going off, trying to fix everything at once,
yeah,
you know, I need to calm down and you know, and do more stuff like Hank does inside of his lessons. Give more mindful rehearsals, mm-hmm, you know, swing at lines and swing through gates and, mm-hmm, you know, and pay attention, you know, pay attention and change stuff up. You know, I think that periods of melee and then periods of discipline make fun packaging mm-hmm of practice experience, I mean, but you know, all tailored to your own, sure, you know, preference. Yeah. Like you're saying, you're asking the fundamental question to me
yeah
is where is the sweet spot of self-regulated learning,
yeah,
and according to Csikszentmihalyi, whose aim was to help people identify a place of experiencing where they would be totally absorbed in the challenge of the goal or the puzzle, and confident that they could manage it with everything they had,
sure,
right? And if you try to do too much, you create anxiety. If you're not going for enough, you create boredom.
Yeah.
Where is that place? Some people, you know, say it's like where you can succeed half the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so is that good enough for you? Do you need to succeed more than mm-hmm that? You know, I mean, you're at a, I believe that, you know, as we've been talking about different things related mm-hmm to coaching and, you know, in our business and that, you know, this is right there on the fundamental questions. How can we transform our experience of practice
yeah
to a place where it really moves us forward and we really love doing it and we want to move towards it, not drag ourselves there like it was a yeah drudgery that sure we needed to do because...
Yeah.
You know, as my doctor said to me, Pete, you know, how do you get exercise in the wintertime when you can't walk the golf course? Well, doc, I think about doing this and I think about riding the bike. I think about doing that. Well, Pete, my studies have shown that if it's not fun, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's where you find the fun.
Yeah.
And you sounds like you found it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I did. I guess, yeah, surprise. It's making me rethink, like, the value of being, like, the value of, like, ending a lesson by the student hitting, like, 10 really good 7-irons on TrackMan. It's like, is that... If they started out not hitting it very good, and now it's like, okay, they're hitting really good, like, you would be like, oh, wow, like, I did such a... They're happy, like, you're happy. But, like, for me, like, I was able... Like, I got to that place, and then when I went to the course, I wasn't able to do it. I wasn't able to do it. And so it's like, maybe there's a different answer for each person, but...
I think winning the moment is fun.
Sure.
Winning the lesson, yeah. Winning the, as I, you know, say to, you know, Brian Funai, I find myself saying to him more and more, you know, like, you did a good job finding it again, mm-hmm. You know, because he frequently will come in and, you know, and have to find it again, find something, and he's getting good at it.
And find it, but he can find it when you say he can find it, how does he find it? In what way? What is he trying to pay attention to?
He can manage the, first of all, reach. Okay.
Let's take reach. So he's noticing where the club hits the ground.
And where it hits on the face.
And where it hits on the face. And maybe making adjustments by paying attention to just his body or the club?
Well, ball position,
okay.
Distance from the ball,
yep.
But also gates,
mm-hmm.
You know, being able to go through, and by gate I mean a series of exercises that you can pick up, mm-hmm. You know, at any place, basically that start off with the club face aligned, yeah, to the ball like this, and we'll swing and we'll miss the ball to the inside, sure. Or we'll miss the ball to the outside. Now if we can do that, and we can, you know, still hit the line,
yep,
that would, you know, relative to the a line that's at right angles to the target, that would, yep, be right under the ball,
mm-hmm.
And now can you, having shown that you can make that large correction, can you adjust a little bit to hit the ball off the toe,
yeah,
and or the heel, you know, whatever, mm-hmm, whatever it is that you're not doing,
mm-hmm.
So he can do that, and he knows now that it's not just a matter of creating a mechanical advantage in his distance from the ball or his ball position, but he's also got intent, his intention to hit it where on, mm-hmm, the face.
Yeah.
And so he's got a couple of tools that he can use in that regard, and so he can change that. He can also change path and club face angle.
Yeah, because for me, the way of like finding it each day in my practice was like all mechanical, or like a very high percent of just like remembering certain mechanics and then hitting it, and the ball would get better. And that was like too, that was like on the course, it was too big of a bridge almost. It's like too internal, too much, mm-hmm, thinking about, you know, certain things, as opposed to, you know, your intent, what you're trying to do with the club or different things like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, those are more digestible thoughts, yeah, than specific mechanics, aren't they? But yeah. Yeah,
it's hard. Like when like Hank moves you to a better spot, you really feel something and hit it different. But like, and the next day you can feel that again. But then like, it starts to wear off. Like you don't have that same feeling. As it's not as strong, it's not as bright of a light bulb as it used to be.
Mm.
And so, you know, in the moment, these things are really, it's like, wow, like that produced a really like quick and dramatic change. But then it's like, okay, it's almost like it was a, you know, a rubber band that was like stretched out. I was like, wow, that's really big. But like eventually that rubber band is like going to just go back to where it was. And that's kind of what I felt. Mm-hmm. I felt happening, but only now it was like a couple other things were changed. So like when it got off, it was like, it was really off.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I remember when you were talking and describing it, I think to myself, yes, it's like, you know, what I would do, you know, going out onto the golf course is I would, you know, have three balls in my pocket and I'd throw a shaft on the ground and I would hit maybe two or three shots from that same place, knowing that I've actually got to go back to what I would do if I were inside, you know, which would be, you know, I'd take it up, I'd pose for a minute, I might contrast it, I might, you know, do exactly all the practice swinging that Hank would do. Well, I don't, I'm not going to do that on the course, right, ultimately, but maybe I have to, you know, so now I've got to like, oh, well, I'm going to be out here with people, but I'm going to be carrying my portable gymnasium around me, and I'm not going to be playing golf.
Sure.
I'm going to be training myself. Mm-hmm. Within the context of, I've got to move at the pace of the course.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this is going to, today, this is going to look like spring training in baseball. Well, Andy was very good today with his four seamer, and and he threw his changeup a few times for strikes. And but, you know, he also walked three in the.
Sure. Yeah. And so I'm not like, I probably played worse than I had. Had all last year, but some I didn't have any like high for that difficult of a course with like trying something new. Like I didn't have tons of, I wasn't really like disappointed, you know, like I just, that it is what it, you know, what it is. Cause I'm pretty good. My like short game, short irons, putting, chipping's all pretty good. So if I had a course where like a bad drive wouldn't kill you, like I still could have scored fine, but not, you know, not at that course. But so, but I still have a sense of like, it was, and I think this is something like each person probably has to figure out on their own, but I have like a sense of after like trying this on the course, like it was, it's going to be like too much at the same time. And so now it's finding like, what's my own version? Like I've got this model that I know is like pretty good. And so like, what's my own way to do it?
Yeah,
and so I think that's a fun way to think about it because Haney is—he's really convincing the way he talks about like, well, you got to have this certain swing so you can hit all like nine shots. But didn't Colin Morikawa just win like two majors hitting like only fades? You know what I'm talking about? He's got his, those guys with like their bowed left wrist and the shut face. Like they're probably a pretty one dimensional. Got right, they just have a thing that they do and they're really good at it. No one would call him as masterful of a player as you know, as Tiger Woods, who could seemingly do whatever he wants with the ball. But
no, I think you're right. I mean, you know, that yes, that Hank represents an ideal.
Sure.
And and I think that the particulars, you know, that you discovered in yourself, the practical aspects of moving somebody, you know, forward, are things that we're still, you know, learning from our practice of teaching, and I think, you know, I mean, it sounds. You know, and like your recent experience is incredibly valuable because of the inquiry, you know, that it stimulated and your thought like, no, I got it now. I'm glad to have the map of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll take another lesson from Hank at some later date and I'll get more insight that I don't currently have into some of the specifics. And, but I'm creating my own roadmap as to how I'm going to, you know, bring about the change. And, you know, I mean, that sounds like a lot. That sounds like a lot of growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm, I, Yeah. I mean, I love the track you're on with it. And, you know, and I think that that's just a wonderful thing about, you know, having this kind of a circumstance with a group of like-minded
sure.
people,
yeah.
including Hank.
Yep. Yep.
You know, who's here, you know, sharing and showing and stimulating our thoughts and showing us things that we weren't sure
yeah.
was possible.
Yeah.
And so in any event, I mean, I think that, you know, from the testimonials that your students sent back, I mean, you're in a hot place, you know, from a teaching standpoint, and your
sure.
students are, you know, glad of the energy and the time that they put in with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
yeah.
Congrats.
Cool. Thanks, Pete. That's a good place to wrap up.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully be back soon. We got to get to play golf and got a lot more to talk about. So.
Definitely.
All right.
Thanks, Andy. Before you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.